Next on BYUSN, the Cardiac Cougs strike again. BYU turns a 17-point halftime deficit into a 12-point victory. What sparked the comeback, and what does the win mean moving forward? Jimmer Fredette will join us to discuss those things, including BYU's comeback win against TCU and the big win against Kansas, plus what those victories can do for BYU's confidence heading into the postseason.
You always tied for fourth place going into the final week of the regular season, what the Big 12 tournament would look like if it started today. And who knew that Keaton Slovis is faster than Tyler Algier, Puka Nacua, Jaren Hall, and Zach Wilson? How the BYU dudes did at the NFL Combine.
Speed. I am speed, says Keaton Slovis. Welcome to BYU
Sports Nation. Where was that last year?
Presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is a winning Monday, March 4th. I am Spencer Linton. He is Cosmo's magician assistant, Jerem Jordan.
We finally bust out some Job-like, displays on Saturday. And
yes.
Cosmo, like, what can't this Cougar do? I don't know. Maybe vote because he's a Cougar. He did a magic trick.
Oh, yeah.
And legit, I'm like, how is this done? Girl enters with the TCU shirt. She exits with the BYU shirt.
I love it so much.
Like, what?
It's a slotted box, though. And
yeah.
So, like, it,
how
it
is
moves
she contorting?
How in the world is she doing this?
It's a miracle! I don't know. But that wasn't the only miracle that happened or magical thing that happened in the Marriott Center, because BYU's comeback was incredible, man. A little Marriott Center magic. Never
yes,
anybody.
We needed a magic trick to spark the Marriott Center magic in the second half.
The greatest trick was the comeback, but Cosmo was a close second. That was pretty good, man.
Unbelievable!
Where are you, by the way? I can barely see you.
I knew that joke was coming. That's one of your go-tos. Anytime anybody wears anything camouflage, like, you can take that to the bingo card bank.
I just see hands and a head. I don't know where you went.
That's one of Jerem's top five go-to jokes.
Hey, Benna.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, with magic on
hunting season or what?
Let's discuss what went down on Saturday night and get to what's trending. Roll it. Rise and shout. What's trending presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event.
Halftime, TCU 46 and BYU 29.
He didn't want us to leave this game without TCU feeling that we didn't show up.
Get top Saunders. Saunders will hang and hit.
What a shot.
Richie gets to the rim and scores it.
Miller trailed it.
Richie for the lead from three.
Saunders!
BYU leads.
Look at the emotion on Richie Saunders' face. I don't see him do that very often, but that was deserved on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. He was Cougar Nation.
That place was incredible.
Thumping, by the way.
It got,
I'm told. I just
super loud, for sure. And I love the recency bias, because I had a bunch of fans say, man, I don't think I've ever heard it that loud. And I'm like, nah, if you were
like,
at these
games. You don't remember the Baylor game a week and a half ago?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's been that loud like five or six times this year, but it's still special every time.
117 decibels, by the way, is what someone had.
And that's right there with 2020 Gonzaga when BYU won that game.
Oh, it's the loudest since San Diego State 2011. We can't quantify
it
this.
It was unbelievable.
It was awesome.
And, yeah, sure, the crowd was, I mean, obviously frustrated at halftime. They were waiting for something to happen. And then BYU goes on this remarkable run in the second half. Mark Pope said, you know, I thought we could, like, cut into the lead. We just did it a little faster than I thought maybe we would.
It was big run, allowed a little run,
big
run.
Big run, yes. Okay, 17-point deficit turns into a 12-point win.
17, you say? 17-plus?
Indeed, 17-plus.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jerem, what sparked the comeback Saturday night for BYU against TCU?
Apparently it was what happened at halftime because BYU's down 17, and then Trevin Nell told Greg and Mark on the BYU radio postgame that they did the following.
Instead of coming in and just getting super mad at us, he actually came in super calm, cool, and collected.
At halftime?
Told us what we needed to do, and then said, everybody move the chairs. I don't know if he wants me to tell you guys this, but he said, everybody move the chairs, and we started almost like chest bun everybody. So we like, he's like, I want everybody to start like kind of hitting everybody to make sure we're here.
Get hyped?
Like, yes. Because he didn't want us to leave this game without TCU feeling that we didn't show up.
So that's what turned the tide. That's
so like a mosh pit in the locker room at halftime.
They played some Linkin Park, and then they just got after it. No, there was no way that TCU was going to maintain that level of three-point shooting. They started like 7-for-8. BYU was 1-for-13.
And BYU wasn't going to be that bad forever.
Yes, neither of those things were going to be maintained. BYU, by the way, ends up shooting exactly 32.1%. now 21-2 and shooting 32% or better. That's amazing. Trevin Nell's start to the second half, incredible. He ends up with 20. Richie Saunders changed this game, though. His juice, his production, his energy, his mojo. Like, he just provides this team a little something every game, doesn't he? And he provided a lot of something in this one. Foose kept getting singled. No one dares double down on any BYU post player ever because there's too many shooters. Game-high 21, Foose was spectacular, 8 for 11. Jackson Robinson didn't have, like, a huge game, but he makes timely shots when he does. BYU shoots 64% in the second half. They only have two turnovers. 58-29 in the second half.
58 points in the second half.
Scored 29, which is the same number they had in the first half at Kansas, by the way. They just gave up way more. Largest halftime deficit of the Mark Pope era overcome for a win. Big time win, because for a minute there at halftime, it was like, oh, let down post Kansas. Yep, let down. Nope, it only lasted a half. But statistically, all the numbers regressed to the mean, and BYU won by 12. That's an amazing plus 29 from halftime on.
Yeah, largest halftime deficit, as you pointed out. And I had some people say, well, wait, what about the Dayton win last year when they were down like 25? Or it's like, okay, yeah, that's the largest deficit the BYU's ever faced in the Mark Pope era and come back and
so
won.
You're right. That is number one. So
but
this
in terms
is number...
of a half, I don't think... Oh, I think the halftime deficit on Saturday was the biggest. And then
overall, Dayton.
For sure.
But like TCU greater than Dayton.
100%. Okay, so they were down six by 16 at halftime against Dayton, and that like slid to 25 or 26. But maybe just, I mean, we saw these flashes, and that was referenced by a few people on the BYU sideline after the game. It was like this team, they've been through it, even last year against Dayton. Like, they know that they have what it takes to make a comeback, and certainly when you get the Marriott Center crowd going, it gets super special. In fact, I talked about the anatomy of a comeback with head coach Mark Pope after the game and what went into it, and he had this to say.
You know, we got it down to a 1-2-point game, and then we turned it over a couple times. They, in like 45 seconds, they jumped it back to 8, and we called a timeout, and we came and sat down, and the guys on the bench, Trevin Nell was the leader of the conversation. They're like, guys, hey, we know we're going to take some punches. It's okay, and he was such a steadying voice for our guys, but that's a comeback. It's going to take 20 minutes, and these guys actually got to it a little faster than normally happens, but I was grateful for that.
I'm completely distracted by the band behind him.
It was very loud.
They were just getting at the pep band was getting after
it. It was very loud.
The entire, well, it was like half the interview. They were doing their thing, man. Just trumpet solos for days. Saxophones is awesome.
Listen, I mean, BYU starts 2 for 19 combined from the 3-point line.
That doth stinketh to me.
2 for 19. You brought up 1 for 13 at half. Like, I think BYU made one of their next six, and it was Trevin's
like
first three-pointer right out of the gate, and then they missed another five. It's like, oh, man, this is rough. They proceed to make 7 of the next 9 to get to that 32%
Which 32 is not even great. It's not very good. I think it's good. It's like fine.
But you go 9 for 20. If you make 9 threes, okay, after you've made 2 of the first 19, you're going to be able to do what BYU did. You're going to score in a hurry. That burst ability, they just have it. It's weird. BYU's never out of a game, ever. They were down 12 at Kansas, and I was like, oh, man, are they done for here? No.
If you can make, like, you have 4 dudes when Ali's on the court, 5 dudes that can make 3.
Yes.
Of course you're in it. Of course you're in it.
So many different things, aspects, people played a role in this. Certainly Trevin Nell kind of got things going when he made a few threes, and Richie Saunders was so special. Foose Traore, what do you do with him? Like, I don't think Big 12 teams really know what to do with Foose.
Like, Hunter Dickinson did an excellent job on Foose, but Foose also had 5 assists in that game, Spence, and he was rebounding pretty well. So only 6 points, but if the dude's 7'2 with, like, a massive wingspan, yes, he's going to give Foose some trouble. But the average Big 12 team doesn't have a dude who can guard him. He is the second coming of Keena Young in the post, by the way. A little shorter,
but stronger.
Amazing footwork. Yeah, stronger. But what I mean is footwork and uses both hands, excellent around the rim. Like, Keena Young looked like he was this small forward who suddenly was playing power forward. Foose, and that's a fun connection right there. Two buddies.
Yeah,
you guys have been to Mali, right, to do great work off the court. These three really stick out, right, with Richie in how they played on Saturday. And BYU goes 2-0 last week. We did not think 2-0 was going to happen. We don't necessarily think 2-0 is going to happen this week. Like, can BYU do it again? But BYU's in a great spot, bro. BYU's in an amazing spot.
Two games over 500 for the first time in Big 12 play. Coach Pope said it took us a little while to get here, but hey, we're here. 9-7 going into the final week of regular season play.
With the tiebreaker over Kansas, you don't have it over Texas Tech. That's who you're tied with currently in fourth.
I mean, BYU is in real position to finish as the number 5 seed in the Big 12 if they can split this week. Assuming that Kansas doesn't win both, and they still have to play at Houston.
They play at Houston Saturday.
I don't think that that's going to end up in a KU win, but stranger things have happened in this conference.
BYU's going to have a higher seed than Kansas, dude, in Kansas City.
More than likely, like, percentages would suggest.
Probably, right?
We'll get into some specifics of that. But, again, on the two games over 500, I asked Dallin Hall about that on Saturday night and what something like that, accomplishing that mark, means to this team.
It means a lot. You know, everyone counted us out at the start. And even going into the Big 12, people count us out, but we never cared what anyone thought. It was just us, the guys in that locker room, our circle. And so to see the fruits of our labor, to see it pay off is really big. And so we're not done yet. It's a great milestone. We just want to keep pushing the envelope and keep reaching because we have bigger goals than this.
BYU's won 3 of the last 4. Since an 0-2 start in Big 12 play, they have gone 9-5. And in the 3 wins in the last 4 games, they have taken down then number 11 Baylor at number 7 Kansas and a TCU team that's just outside the top 25.
Who's the tourney team? Like, look, we haven't seen BYU really this high in a minute, right? It's maybe 2 weeks ago.
Texas Tech owns the tiebreak on both BYU and Kansas.
Yeah.
But BYU, as you referenced, Jeremy, owns it on Kansas.
So the hope is that Tech goes 0-2 this week. They have West Virginia and Baylor, I believe. If BYU goes 1-1 and Kansas goes 1-1, then BYU would be at least a 4 seed, Doc. Like, that is what's at stake. You want to root against Texas Tech this week. You want to root against Kansas.
Texas Tech beat West Virginia on Saturday night, but they were down.
Okay, like, Oklahoma State then.
It was Oklahoma State, yes.
It's the other clunker, right?
They're probably going to go 1-1.
That BYU lost to. Like, they'll probably go 1-1. And BYU has revenge versus Oklahoma State themselves on Saturday. You got to win that game. If BYU wins Wednesday at Iowa State and shocks the world like they did at Kansas, which, by the way, at Iowa State would be a better win than at Kansas in terms of net, in terms of ranking. It's like the perception based on Kansas historically is Kansas. I understand. But the reality is this year, that'd be a better win. And BYU don't own the tiebreaker. Granted, they're not going to touch Iowa State in the standings right there at this point. It's Houston and Iowa State are the
and then Baylor looks like the clear Houston's number 3.
Houston's 1 or 2. Iowa State could fall to the 2 or the 3. But so if BYU got the 4, they get a double bye. Like, there's a shot at that. I don't expect BYU to win per se Wednesday, but if they do, holy mackerel, we're talking about the possibility of top 4 for BYU.
Yeah, yes.
But if BYU is 5, that's great. You just have to win another game, right? I am concerned looking ahead, like, how effective will Ali Khalifa be in back-to-back nights or games with the knee? That first day, you're all in, right? So that's next week. But hopefully this week, BYU can have a great week, go at least 1-1. And if you said you beat Iowa State but you lose to Oklahoma State, I'd take that right now. We'll take the invert too.
Finish
10-8, bro. And
probably is the number 5 seed in the tournament.
Firmly in the field. And then right now, Lenardi has BYU as a 5 as of like 20 minutes ago.
So the 5 seed carries some significance, not just in Kansas City in the Big 12 tournament, but also in Joe Lenardi's bracketology.
And hopefully BYU wouldn't fall if they go 1-1 in back-to-back weeks.
And how much will then BYU be asked to do to maintain a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament? Let's say they finish 10-8. How much are they going to be required to do in Kansas? Do they need to win a game?
Do they have to win 2 games?
To hold on to that 5 seed?
Hopefully 1 win is enough. It's probably a quad 2 in the quarters, or round 2, sorry, on Wednesday. And then if you lose Thursday in the quarters, is that good enough to hold it? Now, what you could do is just be the 5, and then you match up with Texas Tech again potentially. You win, and that would be what, a quad 1? Let's go.
Yes. So if BYU is the 5 seed in the Big 12 tournament, right now they would take on the winner of UCF and Oklahoma State. So there is also a scenario where BYU could play Oklahoma State in their final regular season game, and then if Oklahoma State beats UCF in Kansas City, then BYU would be playing Oklahoma State again.
Which would be wild. That hasn't happened. And
that's certainly a unique scenario.
But I love the spot BYU's in.
How much fun is it to even talk about?
It's so fun.
To be having this conversation.
Yes. Did not think we'd be in this spot. It's been a great basketball season. The best and most exciting opportunities for BYU are ahead of them. Wednesday and Saturday. Next week in Kansas City. The next week, hopefully, in Salt Lake. If not, it's in the NCAA tournament somewhere.
Jeremy, I felt strongly this team was capable of 9 wins in conference. Like, super strong. Even after the 0-2 start, I was like, this is a good team. I have apparently maybe have undersold this.
Amazing, right? Amazing.
It's just crazy. Our question of the day, going back to Saturday night, what was the best part of BYU's comeback win against TCU? At Monty_Everts on X says, it has got to be the moment when TCU ran out of timeouts with like 7.5 minutes to go, by the way. Okay. And the crowd was going berserk. There was no way to swing the momentum. You could tell by TCU's body language that it was over. When BYU took the lead, there's something to climbing the mountain.
Yeah.
If you're the home team and you erase a significant deficit and you're the home team and the crowd's in it and you take the lead, good night, everybody.
It was the anti-Texas Tech.
It was the opposite of that game for BYU.
BYU lost a 17-point lead on the road in that situation. So it's good that BYU made that happen. By the way, was the moment actually Andy Reid on the lights out pregame video?
Fans
people
going
were going
nuts.
Crazy. Let's go.
That was really cool. Brandon Palmer on Instagram says his favorite part was Foos. He couldn't be stopped. Dude is so efficient.
There's never been a greater shooter in BYU history by percentage, I mean. I'm not talking threes, although he's actually better than you think from three. Low volume, 60% plus, right? In his BYU career, that's the most among 300 field goals made in BYU history.
Yes,
number one ever.
On Instagram, this handle is depressed_BYU fan. Depressed BYU fan is happy BYU fan.
At least on the court stuff, you good?
They reply with two words. Okay. Favorite part: Richie Saunders. I'm reading it how it was written out.
Yeah. I subbed in primary with Richie Saunders' nephew in the class, Ollie. And I was like, dude, your uncle was pretty awesome yesterday. He was like, yeah, it was awesome. I was like, he was so good.
He is a special dude.
Let's keep singing Book of Mormon stories. Let's go.
Hashtag BYUSN on X, Facebook, and Instagram to join that conversation.
Huge game for BYU in the next one. Wednesday, not Tuesday. Only Wednesday game in league play at number 8, Iowa State. That ranking might even change. Who knows if they're higher. Pre-game coverage at 8 Eastern on BYU Radio coming up Wednesday night.
It could be like number 18 versus number 7 when the new rankings come.
It really could.
Up next, it's Jimmer time. What impressed him the most from the comeback win over TCU? And how does he feel about BYU's legit chances to get to a third Sweet 16 in program history? This is BYU Sports Nation.
This segment of BYU Sports Nation presented by BYU Food to Go, the MVP of your next event.
Trailer, looks backdoor, goes backdoor, reverse lay-in, Trevin Bell. That's an Ali Khalifa special.
And it was a special second half overall for BYU men's basketball as they take down TCU last Saturday night. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports Play-by-Play. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. And it's time that we bring back to BYUSN one of our all-time favorites and one of the all-time greats in BYU athletics. Jimmer Fredette is back on the show. Jimmer, happy Monday on a winning Monday.
Absolutely. It's always better to come back on a winning Monday, right?
No question. And just think about the week that BYU just had. How would you sum it up after BYU beats Kansas at Fog Allen Fieldhouse and then they pull off that dramatic comeback in the second half against TCU?
Just incredible, right? Something that you see that stretch and you're like, if we can go 1-1, you know, we've done our job. And to go 2-0 was something that was obviously special. So just to play in Allen Fieldhouse where basically invented basketball is something that is incredible, right? To be able to play there and to be able to get a win in there on your first time ever, you know, playing in that arena, it was unbelievable to watch as a BYU fan. And obviously it could have had you know, a lapse coming into this next game against TCU. Could have been a letdown or a trap game. And it looked like it in the first half, but then we got it together. We're able to get the win. So it was just an incredible week for BYU.
It's like that YouTube video of the high school football player kid. He's like, I'll be honest, they had us in the first half. TCU up 17. And the regression to the mean happened, Jimmer. TCU was not going to maintain that three-point shooting, but neither was BYU starting 1-for-13. But that second half, BYU was unbelievable. doubling up TCU, allowing only 29 points, scoring 58. What was the biggest difference in the final 20 to you?
Yeah, I think they just took care of the ball better, got good shots, and then they started to get the crowd into it. Like, the home court advantage and momentum is a real thing, right? So once you start seeing that ball go into the basket, the rock starts going crazy. You just get more confidence as a player. The other team starts feeling a little bit of the pressure. Maybe they start feeling the air that be a little bit thinner, whatever it may be. It's just kind of the way that it works in the Marriott Center when you come there and all of a sudden, you know, avalanche can happen pretty quickly. And that's kind of what happened with BYU. You knew they weren't going to shoot as bad as they did, especially at home. They always shoot the ball really well. So you knew that they were going to do that. As soon as they saw a couple of those basketballs go in, you know, and Dallin did a great job of finding everybody and getting everyone involved. Trevin had a great game shooting the basketball. So, I mean, it was just a collective effort as they've been doing all year. But as soon as they see that ball go in, then it's really difficult for, you know, the team to stop hitting those threes.
Jimmer, we have spoken at length about the balance on this BYU basketball team and that every night it can be somebody different. And you brought up a concern early in the season where it was like, hey, they need somebody that can go get a bucket in a critical time. Dallin Hall was that guy against Kansas. Everybody did it against TCU. Has that concern been resolved for you at this point of the season, or do you still need to see more from somebody like Dallin Hall or Jackson Robinson?
No, I think it's been solved pretty well. And like you said, I think the biggest thing that has happened is Dallin Hall has really played great basketball this second half of the year. He just feels comfortable with the basketball now. He knows he doesn't have a short leash. Like, he's going to stay in the game and he's going to play a lot. And he knows that if he makes a mistake, it's okay. He's not necessarily going to get pulled out of the game. That gives you confidence as a player because now you can do and take a little bit more chances, but also know that, you know, you can get into the lane and find your guys or shoot a couple of shots. And if you miss them, you're still going to be in the game. But the teammates definitely expect him to go out there and be able to make a play at the end of the game. And recently he's been doing a great job, not just shooting the basketball, but finding other guys. And obviously Foos has been playing great. Jackson's had some really good games at the end of games. But having the ball in Dallin's hands, it seems like that's the play at the end of the game. He's been making the right situation, right play every single time, which has been awesome to see.
Dallin in the pick and roll or Jackson Robinson at the free throw line, he's really crushing it. Do you like being on the big board, by the way, Jimmer?
Look, you look good. Here. Yeah. Look at this. Yeah, no, I gotta shave. Sorry about that.
So. Hey, this just in, you're not at BYU. You're good, Doc. Okay, BYU's tied for the fourth seed going into the last week. Certainly, if you win at Iowa State, you have a shot at the 3 or 4 seed here. Maybe 5 or 6 for BYU, we'll see. But BYU can go at least 1-1 this week. Holy mackerel, BYU could be top 6 seed. They have a tiebreaker over Kansas. I mean, we're talking about some opportunity here in Kansas City next week.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, this is. But that being said, it's such a tough league that even if you're a 4 seed, you're going to be playing against a really good team that first round. It's just the way it works in the Big 12. Once you get into that tournament, you know, it's 1-and-done. Everything tightens up. But I'm confident in our BYU guys that we can go at least 1-and-1 this week, go in with a really strong record, get a good seed in that Big 12 tournament, and then be able to do really well in Kansas City. I mean, I'm super looking forward to it because I think that this team is built to be able to make a run. They really are. They have not just one guy that can go out and score the basketball. They have multiple guys that can do it. And that's really hard to scout against when you're playing, especially in a 1-and-done situation. And if BYU is shooting well from the 3-point line, or not even well, you told us a stat, like 32%, if they shoot enough shots and they shoot 32% from the 3-point line, that they're winning those games, a high percentage of those games. And I'm like, if you can at least get a lot of shots up and you're shooting at least 32%, obviously they give themselves a chance to win. So that's a scary thing going into a tournament type play where it's 1-and-done. If BYU's hitting shots, they can beat anybody.
Of course, you'd bring up 32. Of course, you'd bring
that,
up 32.
That is the magic number.
Yeah, come on, right?
It's 100% the magic number. And, you know, it works in all stages and everywhere you go. As long as you got 32 there, you're good.
Let's go. Number 32, Jimmer Fredette is with us on BYU Sports Nation.
Mega Jimmer!
Yes. There were a bunch of guys on the BYU basketball team that felt straight up disrespected that BYU beat Baylor, they lost at Kansas State, and they dropped out of the national rankings. They were out of the top 25. They referenced it after the win at Kansas. They brought it up again after the win against TCU. They're going to be back in, Jimmer. So where do you think BYU is going to show up? Where do they deserve to show up after going 2-0 this week?
They'll be in the top 20. I think they'll be somewhere around 17, 18 is my opinion. You know, I think that that's deserving for them for sure. I think they could easily be a top 15 team. But I think they should feel that way. And I love that they referenced it, right? Like, I don't like it when people say, oh, I don't really care about that stuff. I don't see it. No, you do. I mean, you live in the day of social media. You see everything. And you should use it as motivation. I think that's 100% what the coaching staff did. It's bulletin board material. They put it up there and we're like, hey, we're getting disrespected even though we've had a great season. Let's go out there and prove it to everybody, right? And that's the mentality that you have to have. And I'm sure they have that in that locker room, and it's going to only help them as they move forward, you know, getting into that conference tournament. So, you know, take care of business this next game against Oklahoma State and be able to go from there. But I'm sure they're using it as motivation.
I like it, and I agree. I think BYU should be top 20. Absolutely, after last week. Let's go. Okay, fresh bracketology with Joe Lenardi as BYU as the third 5 seed. Do you feel like that would be an incredible spot for BYU to perhaps make a run in the NCAA tournament? And let's be honest, for BYU to go to the Sweet 16, it's taken you and Danny Ainge, the National Players of the Year. But this team is unique in that, you know, there's not a superstar on the team. Maybe Jackson Robinson's NBA guy. We'll see, right? And somebody else. But this team this year, 5 seed, is this the first? We didn't have a National Player of the Year, and we got to the Sweet 16 team for BYU?
It definitely could be. You know, I think it was, you know, that 20 – it reminds me kind of that 2020 year before, you know, once COVID hit, and they, you know, weren't able to have the tournament, which is too bad because that team was really good as well. And they had a collective group that could really play basketball. It kind of reminds me of this group a little bit. And they could score, they moved it around, they could shoot the ball. You know, this group is a little bit more reliant on the three and obviously are really, really good at it. But this is 100%, like I said, this is a chance for us to be able to make a run. BYU is can beat anybody. As you can see, you're going to Kansas where they had lost it all season, and you go and beat that team there. That makes it show that they're a force to be reckoned with if they're shooting the ball well and they're playing, you know, at a high level. So it's definitely something that can happen. You know, you only have to win 2 games, but at the same time, you have to win 2 games, right? So it's a lot more than you think. But I think the fact that they have such a good balance, if one guy is off, another guy can always step up and score the basketball. So it's going to take, you know, a collective effort, but they definitely have the team to do it, and I'm hoping for it.
Jimmer Fredette is on BYU Sports Nation as we look ahead now this week to matchups against Iowa State and Oklahoma State, specifically Iowa State. Based on what BYU did to the Cyclones in Provo, it's natural to think they're going to be out for blood when they get back to their own home gym, and here comes BYU. What are your expectations for BYU as they go again back out on the road to another really tough road environment and riding some confidence?
For sure. You know, you can't worry about what has happened the last, you know, 2 to 3 games, you know, depending on what happens in Oklahoma State. Assuming they take care of business there, you know, being a 3-game winning streak going into that game, being in the top, you know, 20, hopefully, going into that game. Obviously, Iowa State's going to be pumped up for that game. They do not like how they lost, you know, at BYU. So I think something that is going to be interesting is that the toughness of the team going into that game, right? Like, it's going to be a mentally tough game because these guys are going to come out firing. They're going to show everything that they have. They want to beat BYU, and they want to embarrass them, basically, just like kind of BYU did when they played at their place. So it's going to be one of those games where you're just going to have to fight. And I think the biggest thing is just don't let the lead get out of hand. If BYU can keep it within striking distance, especially in the second half, you saw it in Kansas where all of a sudden they can hit a few threes and all of a sudden they're right back into the game and the other team's on their heels because, you know, BYU can shoot the ball so well. So if they can keep it within striking distance, just maintain that, be mentally tough, make sure that they are, you know, withstanding all the runs that are going to happen from the Iowa State and that great arena that they play in, that if they can do that, keep it within a striking distance, they're going to have a shot to win that game. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out and play.
The perception is that a win versus Kansas in Kansas is better than Iowa State. The reality is Iowa State's actually a better team. And they haven't lost at home either, so maybe BYU can pull that off again. But if BYU wins Wednesday, that would be unbelievable. Which brings me to this. What's the best road win in your career? You had some really good ones. At San Diego State really sticks out, right, as a top 10 win. And, of course, Creighton and UNLV and a bunch. What was the best one, and why was it San Diego State?
you know, obviously San Diego State was an amazing one because they're top 10 team and, you know, they just were, they're an incredible basketball team. But my favorite one was when we beat UNLV at UNLV my yes. senior year, because we hadn't beat them on the road as my, as a player. Like, Coach Rose hadn't beat them at UNLV. I hadn't beat them at UNLV. So to be able to do that was, and they were a top 25 team. They were really, really good. So that was fun. But actually, I mean, one of our best wins was my junior year, Arizona.
Yes.
Arizona.
Yeah.
I think they were a top 15 team. And we went in there and smacked them, to be honest with you. Like, we played really well that game. And that was when people were like, who are these BYU guys? That's when we started to get a little bit of notoriety. And that was one of my favorite ones for sure.
You scored 49 points in that game, Jimmer.
Nine threes. Is it true? Because that game, like,
it was a few.
We couldn't really watch that one. Like, it wasn't super available. So did the Arizona fans actually clap and cheer for you when you exited the game at the end?
They did. They actually did. They gave us maybe a standing ovation. They were like, man, I don't even know what happened. I don't know who you are. I don't know what BYU is at all. And I am just letting you know, you did a great job. Like, you guys just destroyed our team. So thank you.
That's pretty nice. We would never do that at the Marriott Center.
No.
Someone comes in and scores 49. No one's clapping for that guy.
No, I know. I feel like anybody that scores over 45 and gets the win deserves a clap, at least a little bit, from an opposing arena. I mean, come on, you don't see that often in college, so yeah. they were appreciative of it.
That's cool.
Let's just hang out in the nostalgia a little bit of that win. Were you surprised, or are you like, this is, I knew I was capable of this. Did that performance surprise you at Arizona? Oh, I think we may have lost Jimmer for a moment. Okay. Regardless,
I think some of those Arizona, I think Lute Olson actually jumped on and cut off the feed.
You brought up clapping Arizona fans, and the Arizona,
and they're like,
stop it!
No.
Cut it out. We didn't do that.
Yeah.
We didn't do that.
Jimmer Fredette's back. Okay, we've reconnected.
He's back. Okay, Jimmer, I don't know if you heard my last question.
Yeah.
And it's all good. I don't know if you heard my last question, but when you went for 49 against Arizona, did that surprise you at all? Or were you kind of just banking on, like, I can do something like this?
It surprised me a little bit, to be honest with you. You know, it was just a lot of points, especially in college. You just don't usually get a lot of opportunity to score like that. Obviously, it took nine threes and playing really well. So it definitely surprised me a little bit. Obviously, I had confidence that I could score the basketball and be able to, you know, do something special on the floor. And that's what I expected when I got out there. But I wasn't expecting that on that specific night against that team. But once it did happen, I was like, oh, wow. So this is really a thing now, right? Like, you know, all of a sudden you show up and I'm on draft boards all of a sudden, and I'm able to, you know, people know who I am, and they're like, oh, wow, you got to watch out for this kid or this BYU team. So all of a sudden it changed. And then it was like, okay, now I expect to be able to score something like that on a given night. So it was really, really fun to be able to do.
Your sophomore year, when you scored 23 against Wake Forest, who was top 10 in the Marriott Center, that's the first time I was like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? This is cool. And then Arizona took it to another level. And then, of course, your senior year was really special, which was awesome. Okay, let's finish with this. You're in the middle of, you know, training for 3x3. You're getting ready. What's the next kind of event for you as you get ready for the Olympics in the summer?
Yeah, so this weekend I go to Pittsburgh, Steel City, to be able to enjoy a training camp out there with my guys. And, you know, our coach, Joe Ludowski, he's from Pittsburgh. So he's like, our first training camp, we're going to make sure that we're doing it in my city.
Nice.
And so I haven't been to Pittsburgh very often, but I'm excited to get out there and just be able to kind of get this thing rolling, be able to, you know, get some sets in. Probably won't do a ton except for, you know, getting some camaraderie, talking over what we want to do as far as a group personnel, and try to figure out our system and try to fine tune things and then get some games in and just start the journey. Right. And, it's extremely exciting. Starting to hit me a little bit, starting to get in a little bit more, you know, just excited for the opportunity and ready for Pittsburgh this weekend.
Just make sure you pack some black and yellow for Pittsburgh, okay? Let's just keep it with the theme of the city.
100%.
Yeah. Jimmer, great to talk
to you,
man.
Bring a terrible towel out. We're going out. We're doing it.
A Giants fan would never.
No, for sure. Eli crushed. Eli's better than Ben Roethlisberger, right? That's the biggest debate.
We don't have time for that. Another day, for sure. Jimmer, great to talk to you, man. Be well.
There you go. Hey, thanks, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Jimmer Fredette on BYU Sports Nation. He is One of the GOATs.
Yeah, BYU. Fun to pick his brain on the Arizona game, which is one of the great games of BYU history. Okay, the final episode of BYU Basketball with Mark Pope is coming up this Thursday night, 8:30 Eastern time on the BYU TV app. Can't believe it. The season finale right here. And then BYU headed to Kansas City next week.
Speaking of, where would BYU be in the Big 12 tournament if it started today? And is it the ideal scenario? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social media. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B on a winning Monday. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. Let's roll out a busy weekend's worth of Monday headlines.
Men's basketball beat TCU. Not sure if you heard about this. 87-75 Saturday night. Trailed by a season-high 17 at halftime. BYU outscored TCU 58-29. In the second half, led by Fuss 21, Trevin Nels 20. Dallin Hall, 12 points, 7 assists. Richie Saunders was incredible off the bench as well. BYU now 21-8 overall, 9-7 in the Big 12. First time two games above 500. Tied for fourth. Cougars are 12 in net, 16 in KenPom. BYU at number 8, Iowa State Wednesday. Expected to be back in the top 25. Today it'll just be where they are.
They deserve to be in the top 20, but I don't know if it's going to happen.
19, please.
BYU women's basketball drops their regular season finale at number 3, Texas in Austin on the Longhorns senior night, 71-46. Lauren Gustin did finish with a game-high 20 points, had 15 rebounds, her 85th career double-double.
Amazing.
29th double-double on the season, which leads the country. Kaylee Woolston, the only other Cougar to finish in double figures, who scored 13 points. So with the loss, BYU finishes the regular season with a record of 16-15 and a conference record of 6-12. BYU earns the 10 seed and a first-round bye. They'll take on the 7 seed Kansas, who is surging, in the second round on Friday in Kansas City when the women's Big 12 tournament is rolling.
Hey, men won at Kansas, women coming for Kansas. Let's go. Three former BYU football players shined at the NFL Combine over the weekend, highlighted by quarterback Keaton Slovis, who ran the fastest 40 time of the four quarterbacks who ran with a time of 4.55 seconds. That's amazing. More coming up in the next segment on that.
4.55.
Offensive lineman Kingsley Suamatia, by the way, third in the bench among O-linemen, 31 reps.
BYU baseball, for the first time ever, they never did this in WCC play, they sweep Gonzaga at Miller Park in Thursday and Friday. Friday's doubleheader closed it out. Homers by Cooper Vest and Luke Anderson, rocking that karma, led the BYU offense to an 11-2 win in Game 1 on Friday. Bryce Robinson pitched six innings, giving up just one earned run to get the win. In Game 2, it was Cooper Vest who hit his second home run of the day, and Breiker Herdsman hit a game-winning two-out, two-RBI single in the sixth inning that broke a 4-4 tie. That was the difference in BYU's 6-4 victory. Up next for the Batcats, who are now 5-5 on the season, their first Big 12 series at West Virginia beginning on Thursday.
Softball scored 8 unanswered runs to beat UC Santa Barbara 8-3 to get to 14-4 this year. Violet Zavodnik sparked the BYU comeback with their 6th home run of the season. BYU hosts Texas Tech, its first Big 12 conference series starting Thursday.
Yeah, good one. BYU picked to finish 7th in conference. Texas Tech picked to finish 6th. Number 27, BYU Gymnastics, top Southern Utah at the Marriott Center Friday night. Judges were weirdly tough. 195.650 for the Cougars in the Taylor Swift Eras-themed meet. Some highlights from the meet, including Anissa Alvarado's 9.875 on the uneven bars, Heidi Schooley with a 9.85 on the floor, and Elise Rollins with a 9.85 on the beam as the beam queen. BYU back in action tonight, once again against Southern Utah in Cedar City.
Women's tennis swept Houston for its 6th straight win and improves to 2-0 in the Big 12. They've never lost in the Big 12. The men's team won its 9th straight match with a 6-1 win over Radford. A lot of winning happening right now for tennis.
What's Radford's mascot? That one I don't know.
The fighting, I don't know.
We're going to need to look that up. Men's and women's swim and dive finished competing at the Big 12 Championships. The men's team took 3rd overall, while the women finished 5th. The men finished with 2 individual Big 12 champions, Brad Prolo, who's been a stud in the 200 fly, and Jordan Tiffany in the 100 fly. Also, he's been great. Diver Mickey Strauss qualified for the Olympic trials in the 3-meter. On top of the 2 champions, BYU's men earned 8 all-conference first-team honors and 13 second-team nods. On the women's side, Victoria Schreiber, Mackenzie Lung, and Emma Marusakova earned all-conference honors.
Radford Highlanders.
The Highlanders.
There you go.
Of Radford.
Who knew? Both golf teams are in action today. The women at the Julie Inkster Meadow Club Intercollegiate in Fairfax, California. The men at the Lampkin Invitational at the San Diego Country Club.
And we'll finish with this. Senior Associate Athletic Director and Senior Woman Administrator at BYU, Liz Darger, has been appointed to serve on the NCAA Division I Women's Basketball Committee with a five-year term that begins this September 1st. Congratulations to Liz. That's super exciting.
She finished a doctorate in June. And then she was on the Young Women's Council with the church. And so now she's trans. She just likes being busy, apparently.
Sheesh. Now we get to the Big 12 roundup. Yeehaw!
Here we go. Sorry, I didn't bring my cowboy hat. Number 15, Baylor. Takes down number 7, Kansas, who lost two. They lost to Brigham on Tuesday, Baylor on Saturday.
Rough week for the Jayhawks.
Baylor by 8, Ray J. Dennis, awesome. 19 points, 10 assists. The loss marks the first time in the Bill Self Kansas era. 7 losses in the Big 12 in the season. It's going to be 8 when they play at Houston this week. Baylor 10-6 in the league. Third place. Kansas 9-7, tied for 4th. BYU has a tiebreaker over the Jayhawks. Baylor in action tonight when they host Texas.
Crazy game between number 1 ranked Houston and Oklahoma. The Cougars in red survive in Norman, 87-85. Jamal Shedd hit a game-winning jumper with 0.4 seconds left to lift the Cougs over OU. Oklahoma trailed by as many as 15. Battle back tied at 85.
Here's
the game winner right there after an initial miss. Jamal
Shedd. Oh, look what I found.
Dude, he is just so big time. Houston's 7th straight win. They're 13-3 in conference. Oklahoma falls to 7-9 in the Big 12.
Number 8, Iowa State took down UCF 60-52. Needed an 11-0 run late in the game to pull away for their 12th Big 12 win of the season. UCF went the final 5 minutes without a field goal. Iowa State in second by itself at 12-4. UCF 6-10. BYU plays, of course, at Hilton Coliseum on Wednesday.
Texas beats Oklahoma State big on their home floor, 81-65. The Longhorns use a 14-0 run to run away from the Cowboys in the second half. So Texas now 8-8 in Big 12 play. The 8th place team, Oklahoma State, drops to 4-12. They're tied for last place with West Virginia. Texas right back at it today in a rivalry game at Baylor, their final trip to Waco as a member of the Big 12.
Texas Tech beat West Virginia 81-70. West Virginia jumped out early, led by as many as 16. Texas Tech hit 13 threes. To come back, Tech 9-7, tied with BYU, holds the tiebreaker against not only BYU but Kansas as well. West Virginia tied for last with a 4-12 conference record.
And finally, Cincinnati wins a hard-fought game against Kansas State, 74-72. ESPN's John Gasway called this game a bubble elimination game. Mm. Cincinnati's Samas Lukosius hit the go-ahead three-pointer with 10.6 seconds left to lead the Bearcats to a huge win. Cincinnati now 6-10 in Big 12 play. Kansas State drops to 7-9. Let's look at the standings, shall we? There's Houston. Everybody staring up at Houston at 13-3. Iowa State a game back at 12-4. Then it just kind of gets a little muddled.
Houston's locked up top two.
Yes. Yep. Oh, Houston. No, Houston.
Iowa State on Wednesday would lock up top.
If they beat BYU, then they're guaranteed to be top two if they win one more game.
Yeah.
Texas Tech, BYU, Kansas, all tied at 9-7. We're all scoreboard watching for all three
Root
of those teams this
Tech.
Week.
Root against Tech.
Oh, you see Texas with the win. They're back up now in 7th place. I said 8th place. They're the 7th place team at 8-8. All right, that's the Big 12 roundup. Now, some more opinions in the whip. The Cougar Whip Round presented by Maersk, your e-commerce logistics shipping partner.
Women's Hoops finished the regular season 6-12 in the Big 12, good for 10th place. They were picked to finish 11th. Mission accomplished?
Yes, the team made it very clear, like one of their big goals this season was to finish better than they were picked in the preseason coaches poll. They did that. I know it was only one spot, but they did it.
Nice job.
Like the goal has been accomplished. So, yes. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
No, happy about it. Hey, go win a game in the tourney. Beat Kansas.
Let's take another look at the Big 12 men's tournament bracket. If the season ended today, BYU would be the 5 seed and face the winner of Oklahoma State and UCF. And then, assuming BYU gets past that game, they would take on the 4 seed Texas Tech. Jerem, is this the ideal scenario for BYU in Kansas City?
I think it's pretty good. Obviously, being a 4, better than a 5 if you could swing that somehow. But due to the loss at Texas Tech, BYU probably going to end up the 5 if they split 1-1 this week.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think it's pretty good, man.
It is the ideal, and it feels like the realistic ideal. If BYU is to be the 4 seed, they have to win both games this week. like, or Texas Tech has to lose twice, and I don't think they're going to do that.
They're not going
to
lose to Oklahoma State, I don't think.
BYU would have to be 11-7. Like, that's a lot to ask. But hey,
be awesome.
They're 10-8, and they're the 5 seed.
Did it last week.
Amazing.
Do it again.
Amazing. All right, after the break, we're going to go back to the NFL Combine and discuss some specifics with Keaton Slovis, Kingsley Suamataia, and Ryan Rico. All had their moments there, right? This is BYU Sports Nation.
Keaton's fast.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by Maersk, your e-commerce logistics shipping partner.
BYU Sports Nation rolls on live from Studio B. I'm Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. Let's recap the NFL Combine for the three BYU Cougars who were invited to compete in Indianapolis, starting with quarterback Keaton Slovis.
Bro.
Who, I mean, shocked everybody when he ran a 4.55 40-yard dash.
Okay, hold on. That's faster than Zach Wilson, Jaren Hall, Puka Nacua, Tyler Allgeier. You're telling me Keaton Slovis is faster than those guys in the 40?
What?
Where was that
world?
During the season? He had a couple of rushing touchdowns at the beginning of the year, right? But he kind of hurt his shoulder. If he's healthy, and Aaron Roderick alluded to this with Keaton, of like, oh, he's a better athlete than you think. He's faster than you think. I don't feel like we saw him, like, get out and run. And like, Puka is faster in pads than he is, like, just running. And Keaton trained for this, blah, blah, blah. I've already heard all this. That's amazing what Keaton did with the speed. Obviously, being a quarterback, it's way more than just the 40.
He threw some dimes,
impressive.
Too.
I would not have guessed he was faster than Jaren and Zach.
Yeah, the guys on the broadcast, I watched a few minutes of Keaton Slovis's workout, and he was throwing some dimes, and they all kind of agree. Like, Keaton Slovis, he's had a surprisingly good showing here in Indianapolis. So I'm so happy for him. I don't know how much a 4.55 in the 40 is going to matter for a quarterback in the NFL. Other than this, it tells me this. He was locked in and prepared, and like he, like if they want to know if he's dedicated and like ready to roll, then like that number sends a message.
And better
right?
athlete than you think.
It sends exactly. It sends a message. He's going to be more mobile, perhaps.
Yes. Hopefully, he can get an undrafted free agent deal. I don't see him being picked. That'd be awesome if it was like seventh round, but UDF.
He'll get his shot.
Yeah.
If you're in the combine, you will be an undrafted free agent.
And that's in spite of like not great numbers. That shows respect to what he did over his
career.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a look at Kingsley Suamataia's numbers, Jerem.
He had a great combine as well. So 5.04 in the 40, 1.74 10-yard split, 28-inch vertical, 9.2 broad jump, 31 bench press reps. That's third most among O-linemen. That's really nice. But the really cool thing was the graphic where they compared him to his cousin, Penei Sewell. Shout out St. George. So Kingsley, just a little shorter. Just 5 pounds lighter, an inch longer in the arm, which really matters for a tackle, a faster 40, and a faster 10-yard split. How about that? Now, Penei was top 10, right?
Top 10 pick, I think.
Kingsley, not going to be a top 10 guy, but the hope is that Kingsley can sneak into later first, second round kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a guy that he's projected as like solid backup to potential starter right now. From some NFL camps. I hope he's started in the NFL in the next year or two.
With his performance at the Reese's Senior Bowl and then with what he did at the Combine, he's now flirting with early second round, maybe late first. It just takes
Fantastic.
One team. It just takes one team. Like,
oh, there's a bunch of teams that like him.
Right, that like you. And
he's going to be fine.
Frankly, a lot of teams want to use him as a guard. He might not be a tackle. So, like,
that doesn't matter.
Put him where you need him.
Yeah.
Get him on the field.
The college tackles become guards in the NFL typically.
Yeah. All right, up next, what was the best part of BYU's comeback win against TCU? More responses to our question of the day after this. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back with our question of the day. What was the best part of BYU men's basketball and their comeback win against TCU on Saturday night? Greg Rosenan on Facebook says, Trevin Nell's three-pointer right out of the halftime gate. The first half was awful shooting the three. That single shot changed the feel of the game.
It did for a sec, and then BYU missed a bunch after that.
TCU got back up by 16.
But it's like, okay, lids off here.
For sure. Our elite response of the day, rather, presented by Pax Healthcare Elevated from J.C. Rhodes on Facebook, who says the entire second half.
That was the best part. I'd argue it's the best second half BYU's played all year. That was amazing.
Today's Rise and Shout-Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Richie Saunders, bucket of chicken knife for the Colonel. Seems awesome.
11 massive points. So many big rebounds.
7 boards and a million juice points.
Yeah. Our thanks to today's guest, the great Jimmer Fredette.
Sorry to Dennis, we ran out of time.
For Jerem, I am Spencer. And another shout out to Danielle Chessman. We'll see you tomorrow back here in Studio B. Go Cougs! Rank these boys in the top 20!
19, please.